This is Power Aesthetic Episode 4. In this week's email, we talked about the idea of principles, what it means to have them, what they are. We had explored a little bit the idea of the story of Theseus and the Minotaur, and I like that one for the discussion of principles because if we think about Theseus as he goes into the labyrinth, it's much easier to have something that you can just sort of guide your path with without having to think about every single turn, every single dead end, how you're going to get back from where you are. Having a set of principles allows you in a way to almost have an autopilot system set up. If you have a carefully structured set of principles, it allows you to do things without having to plan every little thing, because you have a way that you always do things. And if you have a successful way of doing things set up, it means sometimes that you can almost just cruise because you know that you have this system and that this system is effective and successful and is going to take you where you need to go. I was always, as a kid, really obsessed with maps. My brothers and I used to get into whatever it was that we got into, whatever culture it was that we got into. For quite a while, we were all homeschooled. And if we got into a culture, whether that was, you know, feudal Japan or pirates or, you know, whatever it was, medieval knights, and we would always kind of start out by looking at these maps, and we loved making our own. I remember my mom bought me a paper maker one year for my birthday. And so, you know, we would make the paper and draw maps on it and then spray tea or coffee on it and singe the edges. And we had this whole collection of these really cool, maps to hold in your hand. And I think that that love of maps stuck with me for my whole life, because I use that same principle in so many areas of my life now. I like to have a course. I like to be able to see where I'm going. And it's one of the reasons why I always tell people my most effective tool that I use is night before journaling. In other words, I plan my next day the day before so that I don't have to wake up and figure out, okay, what the hell am I going to do today? It's already there. The course is already charted. It's already in the captain's log, if you will. And so I think that for a lot of people, they find themselves mapless in strange country and they're not really sure where they are or where they're going. And it's pretty important to have these things mapped out. And, you know, one of the reasons I started laying out this stuff with Power Aesthetic, and I first started doing this, I guess, over a year ago with one of my friends, Adam. We had a concept for it, and I'd also discussed it with another friend of mine, Greg Walsh from Wolf Brigade Gym. And it was about the idea of saying, look, everyone programs everything, but they often don't program these other things. So I wanted to come up with something that was holistic and programmable. In other words, it had specific areas that it was broken down into, and then in each of those areas, there would be principles or precepts that could be applied. I have been using those four pillars for quite some time, and the four pillars, obviously, as you can see them in the email, are the physical, mental, spiritual, and temporal. I like to have things broken up into areas, and then I have what I call the seven precepts, which I'm working on a little ebook for that too, that are these precepts that I can apply to every single one of those areas. So I'm never sort of in doubt about how I'm going to go about anything. And as I write things down, it creates a blueprint for me, and I can see not just where I'm going, but also where I've already been. And so this whole project with Power Aesthetic is really about showing those precepts and how they apply to the four pillars in many different ways through many different examples. And I hope you guys are enjoying the process so far. I know that I certainly am. You know, a lot of this kind of stuff too, when we think, you know, can this be applied everywhere? I'm always laughing because we've got this boys chat, the bully chat in my crew, the Wolves, and oftentimes what gets discussed is weight training. And as I mentioned on one of the previous episodes, there always winds up being these kind of heated arguments about the best way to do things followed by a general consensus of, well, as long as you have a plan and you stick to it, pretty much almost anything will work. And, you know, you'll hear a lot of people argue back and forth about this idea of, you know, what should I train for? Should I train for strength? Should I train for aesthetics? Which is the better one? Which should I start out with? Which direction should I go? And it's definitely one of those questions that if you have some basic principles laid out, you don't have to make the choice. You know, in my physical training, I always think, you know, what am I doing? What am I training for? So I have two sets of principles. You know, one is if I'm trying to lean out, the other is if I'm trying to mass up. That affects the principles that I follow throughout the day of how I'm going to eat, how I'm going to lift, and so on. And it allows me to not have to log, you know, every single calorie, every single rep or whatever, with the knowledge that there's a difference between going about things on a day-to-day level where I can sort of cruise, and the difference between that and maybe the way that someone who is attempting to be a world champion is going to look at that, where a lot of those guys are going to log every single set, every single rep, every single thing they put in their mouth. And so a lot of our principles have to come down to being able to see this whole map from an overview and say, a great deal of how I navigate my ship is going to have to do with understanding where it is that I'm trying to go. We don't necessarily have to have these hyper rigid, extremely detailed goals, but we do have to know what ocean we're trying to get to. You know, we can't just kind of sail around without a rudder and without a compass, without a course plotted. So your principles will often have to say, or you'll often have to say with your principles, this set applies here, this set applies here, simply based on what goals you're shooting for. So, you know, if I'm leaning out, I generally, my rule of thumb is, no cream in my coffee in the mornings, just water and plain coffee. I try to not eat for as long as I possibly can in the mornings. Oftentimes that'll get me to noon or 1 p.m. I'll have a meal then. I just eat until I'm not hungry anymore. And then I may have another small meal before jujitsu in the evening, and then I'll have a larger meal after jujitsu. That'll be all I eat for the day. If I'm trying to get bigger, or if my boys have goaded me into some kind of ill-advised physique competition or powerlifting competition, then I eat differently and my set of principles for how I'm going to go about my day is different. Generally speaking, when I go into the gym, my rule of thumb on how I lift is I'm going to start heavy with few reps, and then I'm going to work my way to lighter with lots of reps. So I don't have to make the choice between strength and aesthetics. I know that I'm going to be able to train heavy with the barbells, lighter for my accessory stuff, and I'm going to be able to hit both the strength portion and the hypertrophy portion. So I don't have to spend a lot of my time worrying about which one. And that's kind of my autopilot. I'm able to fall back on those principles when, say, right now, mostly I'm training grappling. And that has its own whole set of plans and where I'm going, what I'm trying to learn. And so my day-to-day gym life is not maintenance, because you can never really just maintain. You're either always getting stronger or you're getting weaker. But my heavy focus is not there. So I go in, I put in whatever honestly feels like hard work that day, what I'm capable of that day. That often changes, as a lot of the probably grapplers and martial artists and runners and everybody who lifts weights to inform another form of physical training. You guys are probably very aware of the fact that some days you're going to have an easier time in the weight room and other days it's going to be harder. Maybe your hip's giving you trouble, or your shoulder, or your knee. So, you know, general principles there for the gym is that I go in and, like Tom Platt said, I don't leave the gym a loser. I go in and I give it what I have that day. I'm competing against myself. I'm trying to push myself to put in the most focused, most valuable work that I can that day. So not necessarily the most pig-headed, bash my head into a brick wall, even if things hurt. Something that took me a really long time to learn is that you can't always go into everything with the attitude of a brawl. This holds true for grappling as well. For a long time, I was kind of unable to improve, both in the weightlifting area, I would say, and the grappling area, because I always felt that I just had to go in and go at 100%. A very, very common reason to avoid lots of athletic, hyper strong, and very, very, very stubborn white belts. That those are kind of the guys that you're going to be the most likely to get hurt with, because they don't understand anything under 100%. And while that can be admirable from one standpoint, it's also really stupid, and especially in the weight room, a really good way to just sort of stay injured year round, which I've had my share of. So looking at all this kind of stuff, we can also start to examine principles in other areas and say, okay, where do these precepts apply? And like I said, I'm going to share these seven precepts with you, but the first one that we came up with, and the one that we were sort of the most agreed upon, to the point where I think we even almost launched an email project just called this, was that we were all very agreed on this concept of no middle ground. No middle ground is the first precept of power aesthetic. And it sort of comes from both, you know, high-low theory and in what has been popularly called lifestyle design, which is a really fancy way to just say how you live. And like barbell theory in finances, which I had to have explained to me when my buddy brought it up, because I didn't know anything about investing at the time. Barbell theory is basically straddling these kind of middling level of risk investments and going for super high volatility, high risk investments, and then super low risk investments, and kind of hedging your bets by staying in the extremes. Lifestyle theory, you know, it's about kind of the way that we always put it, was saying, look, I'm either going to be discussing exciting ideas at a backwoods bonfire, or I'm going to be eating, you know, A5 Wagyu somewhere at a really nice restaurant, you know, over a glass of, you know, Macallan M or something like that. And I'm never going to be hanging out with the boys and having a mediocre night, sort of awash in the sterile light of an Applebee's dining room. You know, it's the idea that power lives in the extremes. And that although in our personal lives, balance is certainly something that we can seek in some areas, it's not a balance in the mediocre. It's a balance between the extremes. You know, I either want to be in the gym training as hard as I can that day with intense focus, lifting heavy shit, doing hill sprints, you know, grappling and paying the fuck attention to what I'm doing. Or I want to be, you know, quietly meditating, taking the day off, you know, getting a massage, resetting, recalibrating. I never want to be pretending to watch a movie while I'm jogging on a Globo gym treadmill. You know, that's the middle ground that we want to sidestep. What it really is a disdain for the average and a driving force in our lives that we can apply to the physical, the mental, the spiritual, the temporal, that says, you know, I'm no stranger to the extremes, but I am a stranger to the ordinary. And I want to leave the average to ordinary people. I remember a specific story that illustrates this pretty well. The last transcontinental motorcycle trip that I was on, you know, every other year, we've been doing this East Coast to West Coast to back to the East Coast again, about 10,000 miles or more of back roads, interstates, you name it. And in the middle of the last one, we'd had a bunch of breakdowns, a bunch of problems, and we'd been living at the prestigious First in the Nation KOA in Billings, Montana. And I'd just kind of been camping there as we'd been dealing with all these problems, mostly coming from my motorcycles. And so, you know, we'd just been living in the dirt. We had somewhere had adopted at the beginning of the trip a no showers policy for the whole way. So we were absolutely filthy. You know, jeans stand up if you stepped out of them kind of thing. And at one point on that trip, Angel and I knew we had to fly into Vancouver. We were sitting down to talk to some guys about an IPO deal that we were working on a promo for. And so I remember very well this one specific moment, and we'd flown into Vancouver. You know, we'd been on the road for like, I don't know, 20 some days or something like that. And just totally sunburn and burnout from the road and everything like that. And we were in an elevator at the hotel we like to stay at in Vancouver, the Rosewood, Georgia, a really nice 5-star hotel. And you know, we're sitting there kind of looking at the polished walls and we're looking at ourselves and our reflections are just these hideous road ghouls, you know, and I had like a road beard. I never really grow anything out. And I have this like shitty, patchy, like Keanu Reeves road beard. And, you know, Angel looks horrible. We both have dark circles under our eyes and we're, like I said, we're burned and just our shirts are torn up and everything like that. And I remember I looked over at him, was like, man, you look like shit. And we both started cracking up because we both just looked so ragged and rugged. And I think about 2 hours later, you know, we were slicked up, cleaned up, Hugo Boss, Huntsman, sipping expensive cocktails in the lounge, talking to one of these guys. And the next morning we, you know, we were in a conference room, a little setup, like sort of studio, shooting a promo for this big IPO deal. And to us, there's no strangeness in that because we understand that idea that for us, power lives in those extremes. You know, it's always, I'm either on the back of a motorcycle, you know, ripped on acid, flying across the country, or I'm sitting down in a room worth $7 billion. And that is the one reason is why I can do the other. You know, they both feed each other. And that principle of sidestepping, of basically like hopping over this little creek that represents the average and basically living on either bank, but never in the middle, is something that we've really taken to heart. And I think has helped me out a lot because anytime I'm faced with a decision of do I do this or do I do this, it's kind of like, well, what's the intense one? What is the one that sidesteps the ordinary? And we could do this and it would be average, or we could do this and it would either be really terrible or really great. But I'll take either of those over the mediocre and the boring. And the same can be said, you know, as we move and we start looking at spiritual concepts, you know, this idea of mapping and charting, the spiritual world, the inner world, whatever you want to call it, man, it's an unexplored universe for a lot of people. And I think a lot of us are, in a way, complete strangers to ourselves. How many times, I'm sure this has happened to everybody listening, but you'll do something, you'll feel something, you'll think something, and you'll go, where the hell did that even come from? You know, why did I think that? Why did I say that? Why did I feel that? And, you know, you did it because there was something under the surface and sometimes very, very deep under the surface that rose up. And I look at the internal worlds. Yeah, it's like the fucking Mariana Trench. And there's a lot of really scary, really unknown stuff that lives down there. You know, and in the alchemical process, there's all these references to the idea of deep water and of sort of knowing your Leviathans, and things become less frightening when you know them and when you speak the language down there. And, you know, it's kind of like being an explorer where you're going to these uncharted lands and you're charting the territories, you're learning the languages and you're understanding the local customs and behaviors in these dark jungles where no one has ever been. And if we don't do that, then our entire inner world is a complete unknown to us and we'll never understand why we do the things that we do, what it is that drives us, the failings that we have, the weaknesses that we have, that we just can't ever seem to get a handle on, whether that's anxiety, fear, despair, jealousy, envy, you know, greed, rage, whatever it is. These things and our insecurities as well, especially, come from often deep places that have been reinforced many times over the course of our lives that we have to explore and come to know in order to get any kind of control over them. And as I said in the email, I'm always very blown away by people who spend all their time on the sensory world, all their time on the external world, what's going on outside, what's going on with things that they can directly taste, feel, touch, experience. You know, everything is bound up in the sensory organs. And then this internal world is just a multiverse of unknown space and unknown worlds. We have to program our time, we have to program our attentions there just like we would anything else that's important to us, because our internal body becomes unfit if neglected, if unfed, if unexplored, if misunderstood. And so we really owe it to ourselves to make the time, to force the time to go on these deep explorations of ourselves, and also to get guidebooks there. I'm not a massive proponent of Western psychology or anything like that, but I think that it behooves us to get a basic understanding of what many intelligent people who have come before us have to say about the way that the subconscious or the unconscious works. I'm a big fan of a lot of Jung's writings, and it helped me understand some of the things that were going on. I think that getting some general knowledge of, you know, there's the old classic Games People Play, you know, that was a good book that I read when I was younger on the recommendation of my older brother Matthias. And getting a handle on how people are, why we do the things that we do, can give you a handle on why you do the things that you do, and some of the behaviors that you might have that are problem behaviors, things that you actually don't want to feel. It's very common for all human beings to say, well, this person made me feel this way, this person made me angry, this person made me feel inadequate. But that's really just saying, I have anger, I have feelings of inadequacy, and I allowed this person to flip that switch. So if we don't understand it, we're really at the mercy of the people around us and the external situations around us. And so we need to explore those inner worlds as often as we can. And there's the old quote, you know, the unexamined life is not worth living. And I think that that goes doubly for the internal life when compared with the external life. I'm actually going to take some time for the temporal section of this email and put it together for you guys in a bonus episode that'll be called something like, you know, White Belt Money Basics or something like that, because I think the ideas there are valuable enough to take the time to focus on them, and I don't want to drive me way over on the time frame I'd like to be at for these episodes. I will probably get that recorded and up for you guys this weekend, so you won't have to wait for it. I think that for a lot of people, their general approach to money, their attitude toward money, and the way that they go about making it and using it can use some work. And, you know, a lot of the ways that I think about this stuff is the same way that I think about weightlifting. And I think that a change of narrative, a change of the way that we look at it, experience it, and so on and so forth, can very much help the individual change his relationship to money and turn it into something that he sees as leverage, and he sees in a different way that makes it easier not only to make, but easier to save and easier to put to work for you out there in the world. So I'm going to get on that and record a whole bonus episode around that White Belt Financial Basics section from this week's email. As always, if you guys enjoyed this, I appreciate it if you share it. I know a lot of people are listening on Spotify and, you know, Apple podcasts and stuff like that. You can't support it, I don't think, on those platforms. You have to go to the Anchor site to support it. That's anchor.fm/PAUL-WAGGENER. So anchor.fm/Paul-Wagoner. And you can click the little support button and you can sign up to either do a 99 cents a month, $4.99 a month, or $9.99 a month support. And that helps me out a lot and keeps this project moving forward. I really want to keep this thing going without external ads. So you guys doing that helps me out a lot and keeps the whole project on course. I appreciate it. And even if you just share it with friends, I greatly appreciate that as well. Keep your eyes out for that bonus episode that's going to be dropping this weekend. Have an excellent weekend, and I will talk to you guys in the email next Wednesday.